Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we're going to talk about love today on the show. Is the key to happiness being in love? We'll find out with our guest today. On the phone with us is Dr. Amin Zadeh. He's a cardiologist, a professor at Johns Hopkins University. He's authored over 100 scientific articles, has a new book out. It's called The Forgotten Art of Love, What Love Means and Why It Matters. An interesting book. He explores love and its effect on human well-being and happiness, and whether it be for a partner, child, a pet. How has love made a difference in your life? We'd love to know that. What questions you have about making love stronger? I hope you'll join in the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Dr. Amin Zadeh, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, at first glance, it seems unusual for a cardiologist to write a book about love. Tell us about the relationship between the two and why you did that.
Well, I mean, there are a number of reasons, actually. I mean, there's the philosophical aspect, like everybody else. I'm trying to make sense of this life. You know, what is the purpose of it all? And love clearly is one answer, if not the answer. But we seem to struggle with it, and particularly with keeping love in our life. And that kind of leads to the science aspect. So I'm actually foremost a researcher, and to some extent a clinician as well, but foremost a researcher and as a scientist, and we're trying to understand things. I'm interested to know why we struggle with keeping a focus on love in our lives, and why love is so central for our happiness. And then that it brings also in biology, and how is it anchored in our biology? And that's where my medical background comes in more stronger, trying to understand how love affects our body and mind. And in regards to me being a cardiologist, we know that love has a profound effect on health, particularly heart health. Just the other day, there was another report showing that the quality of marriage correlates with cholesterol and blood pressure values. So we know folks who have long, loving relationships live longer and healthier than those in unhappy relationships or without any relationship. So there are a number of reasons to be interested in exploring the nature of love. And in addition, there are life events which point you one direction or the other. As in my case, they reinforced my interest in understanding the phenomenon of love.
Yeah. And, you know, there's interesting thing about the term love, and I've actually thought about this a number of times. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and she loves our cats, Coco and Tiger, and she loves forensics that she's in now as a freshman in high school. She loves basketball. She loves going to Disney. And she says once, every night before she goes to bed, she says, "I love you." And I'm thinking, well, how does the love for me, I've often thought about this, differ from the love of going to Disney World? Or forensics, for that matter.
Yeah, so there's one aspect of the issue is that, yes, we're using the word love in English language quite liberally for many different contexts. And while we, as you alluded to, we don't really mean the same thing in these contexts. And other languages are more specific and clearly distinguish between liking and loving and romantic love versus brotherly love or parental love and love for God. And in the English language, it's much more difficult here because, yeah, we have essentially just this one word. And so then we have to disentangle the meaning from the context and to really know exactly what we meant.
I've actually go out of my way to try and separate them when I'm talking myself about really liking something versus loving it, because I define it that way. How do you? What's the ultimate definition of love?
Well, there is no ultimate definition, and if you look it up in textbooks or dictionaries, I should say, and Wikipedia, etc., there are a number of suggestions, but there is no unifying the definition because it's such a complex thing. I mean, I do go ahead in my book and say, well, I feel this comes closest, at least to my concept of love, and I define it there as the urge and the continuous effort for the happiness and well-being of somebody. And what I was trying to do there is just to combine two key aspects, and one is the feeling, the emotional aspect, and this is expressed as the urge. When we really love somebody, and you look at your daughter, I mean, you have this feeling inside that you want her to be happy. So there is this emotional portion, but then the other important aspect, and that goes to more the core of the book and then the art of loving, is the continuous effort. So they both have to be there present, I believe, for love to be there, to be in effect, the emotion and the continuous effort, where, you know, commonly, and we're getting probably to this in more detail, we have this perception of love as just being emotion, and we kind of have the tendency to neglect the effort, the continuous effort part of it.
You know, and there was, I took your little test in the book. There's at one point you say, think lovingly for 5 minutes about, take a person and think about that person and all aspects of that person in kind of a loving way, and don't think about anything else. And that's hard to do.
It's very hard to do.
I tried it.
Well, and that goes to the whole aspect of love to be an art, and why it's so challenging, and that's why I think we are having trouble with maintaining love in the long term, because there's so many conflicts, there's so many conflict of interest, and our mind is continuously being pulled in different directions and distracting essentially from our effort to love. And the art of loving is just to be mindful of this and just to refocus ourselves, you know, on love. But that is easy said, but very difficult to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say, I think you say, love leads to happiness. And I kind of enjoyed your chapter on, well, I enjoyed all of it, but I enjoyed the chapter on happiness. You talk about happiness not referring simply to transient episodes of joy, I think you put it, but rather to how fully our expectations of life have been met.
Yes. And so happiness, in a similar to love, is obviously difficult to conceive and because it's also a big concept, but I think there is some consensus among scholars that the expectations play a very important part of it, and so the cliche as we know, the glass half empty, half full, it really applies. You know, the same person, they have the same things. One person is very content, the other person is not. So how we perceive our environment and how that kind of matches our expectation is a big portion of our feeling of contentment and happiness. And so that ties in what we discussed before. It is how our mind, how many impulses we perceive by our mind, which pulling us in different directions. We're actually happy, and other people express this as well, if we don't want anything. If we are in a state where we are not desiring something, that by itself actually is a state of contentment. But again, since our mind constantly wants something, it is a difficult state to achieve. But it has commonality with many other concepts, you know, found in spirituality, religion, philosophy, that it all comes down to that if we are able, through concentration, mindfulness, prayer, whatever you want, that we can achieve that state of not desiring, that actually that leads to contentment.
Yeah. So we can decide to be happy. You talk about that in the book. You give an example, I think, of somebody you work with or somebody you observed who was always happy.
Mm-hmm.
And she made that a choice for her because of a disagreement she had, I think, with a daughter at one point.
With a daughter, yeah. She had, like, a big clash, and she was very unhappy about it. And said that, well, you know, she decided from that point on she doesn't want these kind of things get in the way of a relationship, you know, with her daughter. And so I do believe that happiness, as much as love, is to a large extent a mindset and therefore a choice.
Yeah.
And that sounds harsh because many, you know, people would say, like, well, you know, if that's the case, you know, then everybody could be happy if we wanted to. And others, you know, obviously many people have very hard circumstances, etc. But I do believe it is true. It's just the harder the circumstances, the more difficult it is to have our mind be freed of these circumstances. It is possible, and it's shown in history that it is possible. But again, the issue is that it is hard.
Yeah, it's hard. And do you think you can be, it's hard to imagine this, but do you think you can be really happy if you don't have love in your life?
Well, I think that these two are closely linked. I believe that love is a key aspect of happiness, and that we derive a lot of contentment from seeing someone else that we who we love happy. And then we know that when you have a 14-year-old daughter, you know that you derive tremendous happiness to see her happy. If she, you know, does something she enjoys it, that gives you a feeling of happiness. So I looked into particularly the biology here, and I think there's good evidence to support that focusing on love and at the same time rejecting desires for other things, you know, releases, you know, these hormones in our mind, you know, which create contentment, that is not something unusual per se, because almost all the things we kind of desiring, they create some release of dopamine or other pleasing hormones, and many of them just small bouts of these little highs of dopamine. And but the difference is, it seems that our focus on love leads to a much more enduring release of hormones. So it leads to lasting contentment, and that's why I think there's this close link to happiness in general, and then that probably has its roots in our biology and in evolution.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Dr. Amin Zadeh, our guest today, professor at Johns Hopkins University, and he is the author of The Forgotten Art of Love, What Love Means and Why It Matters. How important is love in your life? Do you think love is a matter of luck, or is it an art? How do you keep love strong in your relationships? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Join in our conversation as we talk about what love means and why it matters with our guest, Dr. Amin Zadeh. Larry Mueller here. Dr. Zadeh is the author of The Forgotten Art of Love. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Speaking of Facebook, Terry emailed us, Terry in Roberts, Wisconsin, emailed to say that she finds she now loves less intensely without infatuation. She still loves, but without disappointment, as she once did. So overall, she's much happier and realizes all things can be lost. Is this a change that comes with menopause?
Well, that brings up the important distinction between the infatuation phase and long-term love.
Yeah.
And that is a very important point, because it leads to a lot of confusion. And in general, we often take this first part where we are so crazily in love, and so everything is so exciting, and this is the phase actually which is mostly portrayed in songs and movies, and many feel this is love. And the issue though with that is it is in fact really an infatuation phase which passes. So there's good science now showing that typically after 3 or 4 years this phase will disappear. And I should say, it's not that our feelings completely disappear, but this very intense excitement will dissipate, and it kind of actually correlates with certain blood hormone levels, which can be traced, and they eventually, after 3 to 4 years, will decline. And then that after these 3 or 4 years, then the long-term love phase begins, which is actually more important, because it's the enduring long-term, but we probably all want. We want long-term love. But that requires much more effort. The infatuation phase, the early phase, which is so exciting, is also the easy phase, because we are so carried by these hormones that it makes it easy to maintain a relationship. And that's, again, part of the idea by nature. But after these 3 to 4 years, when we're not carried by these hormones, then we have to put a lot of more effort in it. And that's where often things start to become difficult, and relationships, in fact, often suffer. There's actually a peak in relationship breakup after these 3 or 4 years because of that.
Yeah, and I saw that you just have one graph, I think, in your book, and it looked like that the intersection of that graph in terms of what you were talking about intersects at around 7 years, and I thought about the 7-year itch movie and relationships happening, going, if they're going to go south, may go south along about that time.
Well, yeah, so that brings up the concept of relationships versus love. And again, I think there's a lot of confusion, because you often equate them. And whereas I believe love is a critical component of a relationship, but relationship and love, they are not the same. We all know of cases where folks are in a relationship, but they are not really loving each other anymore. On the other hand, we can love somebody and not being in a relationship. So relationship is something which, in addition to love, typically has other important impulses and drives. In a regular relationship, and then we have to talk about romantic and non-romantic relationships, in a romantic relationships, we typically, in addition to love, we have some sexual attraction, we have this early passionate phase, and then there's attachment. Whereas in a non-romantic relationship, we typically have love and attachment, but not the other two components. Mm-hmm. And the issue is that these components, they're also, as you alluded to, over time, they have a tendency to change. And that these dynamics cause a lot of confusion in us, because we feel that one of these components has changed, that our love has changed. But our love actually is the one component which can be very constant. In fact, can be the glue, the most powerful component of a relationship. But that is something we have much more control over it.
Interesting. Kate in Fox Valley has something for us. Let's go to Kate. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm glad your guest was just talking just said what he did because my thought listening to you was, I think it's important, particularly when seeking love in one's life, to expand the parameters of that definition so that we understand satisfying, gratifying love relationships can be had on multiple levels in multiple situations. In you can donate your time and develop a love relationship with the that experience, family members, friends, pets. All kinds of love is available to us. Even the environment, you can have a gratifying love for the environment that impels you to work for its benefit, et cetera. And I think that is important rather than just limiting our expectations to intimate love.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Comments, Dr. Zinni?
Yes. I'm very glad that Kate brought this up because, yes, it makes the point that it is love which is really that phenomenon which gives us the contentment which leads to happiness. And it doesn't, as Kate said, it doesn't have to be a romantic relationship. It can be the love, in all these different contexts. I mean, we talked again earlier about your daughter, Larry. So, that is a very powerful love which lasts our entire life and is a source of immense happiness. It is important, as Kate said, not just to focus on romantic love, but on love in all these various contexts.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike in Milwaukee, let's turn to you next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for your show. I heard a story about a man goes to see the Buddha, and he says to the Buddha, "I want to be happy." And the Buddha looks at him, and he replies, "Well," he says, "first get rid of the I, because that represents ego. Then get rid of the word want, because that represents desire. And," he says, "what you'll have left is happiness."
What do you make of that, Dr. Zade?
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, no, this is very insightful because it goes exactly to the dilemma of this situation. We start off saying, "Well, we want something. We want happiness," but the actual way or the only way really to get happiness is to not wanting happiness, and that is obviously very difficult to achieve. But it gets to the point that a state of selflessness leads to contentment, and then goes along with what we said earlier, that a state of not wanting something leads to contentment. So in general, it really comes down to our self-development, that we can free ourselves from all these things that seemingly are so important to us, all these desires. And so it comes back to developing ourselves and finding humility and modesty in our daily existence.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Mike, for that call. I appreciate it. Karen in Racine, we'll go to you next. Karen, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. This is kind of a weird comment, but I had parents and in-laws who were married for 64 years. My husband and I have been together for 38. And a friend's wedding 35 years ago, an old priest said in the sermon that he had just been to a couple who were celebrating their 75th wedding anniversary. Oh. And he said to them, "Did you ever think of divorce in those 75 years? And the wife chimed in, "Divorce, never. Murder, yes." And I always remember that. It's a tough time in a relationship. But it's a lot of work to maintain a love relationship for a long time, but it's just so rewarding.
Thanks so much for calling, Karen. Dr. Zade?
Yes, thank you, Karen. Yes, but no one says it's easy. Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, it is hard. But again, for these reasons we said, because there are a lot of, you know, interests, other interests, and conflicting interests, and there are two people, and they both have their set of interests, and is to, you know, have two people who can control these egotistic drives for the happiness of each other is a very challenging undertaking. But as Karen said, it is rewarding. You know, if you succeed, it's very rewarding. I'm very happy for all these wonderful examples of long-term relationships of people being happy. So it shows to us it's well possible. But yes, it does take some work.
You mentioned, in fact, you gave an example in your book, and I think it was your father-in-law, might have been your father-in-law, asking, I think his wife had died. And someone asked him, might have been you or someone else asked him sort of the secrets of their marriage. And there was an interesting comment that he gave for that. Do you recall that?
Yes, it was. In fact, my father-in-law, who passed away actually now 12 years ago. And it was my wife now, Denise, who asked him, because she saw so many struggling with relationships and she saw how happy her parents always had been. And so she asked him, well, so Dad, you know, what is it? You know, why are you guys so happy? And he said, well, it's very easy. If you, there's nothing in the world which is important enough to upset your mother. If you can't find anybody else, if you find somebody who has the same kind of attitude, you know, you won't have any trouble. So, and I thought it was really a profound statement that if there's nothing in the world important enough to upset your mother. So it says that there are lots of things which seemingly are important to us. There's obviously a lot of essential things, and there's jobs, and there are, you know, desires and ambitions, career, etc. There are lots of things which are important to us, but in order to have a really happy relationship with somebody, we make this relationship the number one priority, and everything else is less important. And we struggle with that because we feel in the moment of time that some other things may be important. But if we are able to maintain that at all times, that we put the relationship top priority, that's a guaranteed way of success.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen, thank you again for calling. Dot in Manitowoc, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Dot. Thank you for calling.
Hello. This is a Chinese proverb. If you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a month, get married. If you want happiness for a year, inherit a fortune. If you want happiness for a lifetime, help others.
No. Well, that kind of goes along with what you were just talking about, Dr. Zane.
Yes, thank you for that. Love is the key. It creates happiness. And if you can maintain that love for others, you know, helping others as a focus in our life, we will be happy.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You can join in too, by the way. I'll give you an opportunity to tell us how important love is in your life, perhaps, or how do you keep love strong in a relationship, in your relationship, perhaps. Give a call at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. We've all heard that men and women are different when it comes to relationships, love. You don't think that's true, though, do you? Talk about that.
Well, you know, I researched this quite a bit, and there are some general tendencies for men and women to approach or relationships and have different ideas. But if you look at it closely, these differences are fairly small. such they are not sufficient really to define a gender difference. And the other big revelation there was that most of these differences were strongly influenced by societal norms, meaning that men and women often act in out of expectations, meaning that they feel that they have to fulfill a certain role in society. And if you remove that as much as you can, these differences between men and women actually were even smaller. So all in all, you know, I think it's it is not justified to say that men and women have a, you know, different approach. There are some smaller differences, but they are largely explained by societal roles. And I think it's always dangerous to say, well, men are like this and women are like this, and often, you know, we do or we don't do justice to the individual characteristics of a person, and we all know people who are very different from the general cliches and stereotypes.
You talk in the book about the possibility, or probably the likelihood, it would be a good idea, I think you say, that we teach people children, for example, how to be loving. And how can we teach our children to be loving?
Well, I mean, I'm glad that you bring that up, because this is really something I was particularly passionate about. Because I have children too. You have a teenage daughter. I have the children that age as well. And so the thing is, since love is arguably probably the single most important aspect of our lives, the question is then why shouldn't we place a greater emphasis on making sure our children know everything that helps them to have and hold love in their lives? And one idea is, why can't we just have some general education about concepts of love at school, and particularly during teenage years? And I cite some frightening statistics in my book, and I'm sure you had shows about this and your program, because there's increasing awareness about the stress levels among teenagers. And yeah. There was a 1913 survey, for instance, by the American Psychological Association, reporting stress levels that equaled or even exceeded those perceived by adults, with about one-third of teens expressing signs of depression. And I mean, these are really frightening numbers. And we know that children are very vulnerable during the teenage years and in need for guidance and support. At the same time, we have to admit that they often feel least understood by us, by the parents. So then at the same time, they have all these puberty hormones clouding their brains and leading to confusion about their feelings, at their first crushes. And so that would be, I think, a really good idea just to have some kind of more broad education about concepts of love, because as we discussed here, there's still a lot of different opinions about what is love, and is it just this early falling in love infatuation phase? What does it mean, long-term love, and what does it mean for our decision-making process? There's lots of evidence now from neuroscience that our ability to make decisions is markedly impaired in the phase of when we are early in love, and when we are during this infatuation phase. So these are all information which I think would be very, you know, valuable to teenagers to kind of get a grasp about, you know, what love is all about. And I think the concept of that love is a lot of what we can. There's a lot of we can do to foster our perception of love. You know, it's a very empowering and important concept for them and for their lives. And so I basically, the idea is just to have some dedicated, you know, classes at school to maybe also to get their mind off the academic pressures, you know, which are horrendous, to be honest.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
It's just I can never get over, you know, how much work and pressures there are right now for teenagers, which gets us to some societal issues. You know, we're obviously placing so much emphasis on academic success, which the teenagers feel. Why don't we, as a society, make the decision that there should be more balance and give teenagers also some perspectives on other concepts in life.
Yeah. Anastasia in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, thank you.
And what's on your mind today?
I'm in a relationship with my best friend of 5 years, and this is an entirely different relationship from any I've been in before. And we look at love from the standpoint of how can we support each other in our growth and potential as friends first, and how can our relationship better enable us to serve in the world. It's really more about looking outward, not about looking at what we can get from the relationship, but what can we do to support each other and grow as individuals. And this is the healthiest relationship I've ever been in. It came after many years of psychotherapy and working on past issues, and I'm just so grateful for it. It's an entirely different experience.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Zadeh, comment.
Yes, Anastasia, thank you for calling. And I'm glad that you're saying that, because this is the concept. In a good relationship, be working towards the happiness of the other. If both do that, then we are on track to a good relationship. And it also, what you're saying, shows that the early infatuation phase is, while it may be nice, it's not a necessity for love. So many very good, happy, meaningful relationships are the way you describe it. There are two people, looking out for each other, looking out for the happiness of each other. And that is something which, as long as you do this, working out and looking out for the happiness of each other will work as long as you do that. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, oh, boy, there's so much we can talk about, and here we are out of time. Dr. Zadeh, I want to thank you so much. I hope we have a chance to talk again. This was a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Larry.
It's been a pleasure. Dr. Amin Zadeh, professor at Johns Hopkins University, and his book, a fascinating book. It's called The Forgotten Art of Love, What Love Means and Why It Matters. Great to have him with us. And you know what? It's great to have an old friend back, too. Jim LaLuzerne is coming up next. And we're going to be talking about a little bit about the aging eye and seeing the fine print through glasses, perhaps. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.